The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition today. Got Jim remote from the sunroom. Freezing cold in there today, though, because I think it's like 5 degrees outside or something right now. But got him connected anyway. Good thing audio works even when it's freezing cold. Are you wearing a coat there in the sunroom?
I'm not. I'm just in a long sleeve shirt. I'm manly. I can handle it.
Very nice. You got your wood-burning stove going, though?
I do, but the stove is in the TV room, which is a very small room, and I blow the heat into the kitchen, which is a very large room, so the sunroom doesn't get any of the wood stove heat, as you know, because of the positioning of the wood stove. So the sunroom is cool, I will admit that. It's warm when it's sunny. As I said before in the podcast, it's cold when it's cloudy, which is today it's cloudy, so it's cold, not to mention it's 5, 6, 7 degrees out there. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty cold out there.
It's cold enough.
Not
the
as
snow
cold
is crunchy.
As the negative. Oh, what were you going to say?
So it's cold enough. The snow makes kind of that squeaky, crunchy sound when you walk on it.
Yeah, it is snowing a little here, but I mean barely anything. But I was on the phone before the podcast started with a client of ours in South Dakota, going over a few things, and they told me it is negative 11 right now where they are. That's pretty cold.
That
negative
pretty
11.
Cold, yeah.
That's cold.
Glad,
okay,
glad
well,
we're balmy
in.
At 5 degrees or whatever here.
Yeah, well, I'm inside. The office must be nice and warm, especially where you are. You're upstairs, so all the heat in the office rises.
Yeah, but when I'm recording and stuff, I have the door closed, so it doesn't really get as warm as you'd think. But
yeah, but
I'm okay.
Your
I'm
office
a long sleeve
has a
shirt.
Heating vent.
Well, true. I'm not cold by any means.
Okay. You got your short sleeve polo on?
No. I've got a little kind of a, I don't even know what you'd call it. It's halfway between us. It's not really a sweatshirt, and it's not a shirt. It's kind of halfway and be like a thick, long sleeve shirt.
Wow, I've never seen you in anything but a short sleeve polo.
Well, that's my official outfit, but it was
not
a little cold today
degrees.
For that. No, I decided to bundle up.
Okay, all righty. Well, let's get into this. We are going to lead with Social Security question, like we always do. This is from a Coloradoan, so we don't really get those too often. But this is a Coloradoan. I would, well, you might want to write some of the numbers down.
I will.
It's up to you. But it begins, and he gives his full name, but of course we're going to call him George. And we'll call his wife Georgette and him George. He says, my wife Georgette currently collects her Social Security benefits based on her own earnings. She receives $1,450. She was born August 4th, 1952.
Okay. So she's 68
and he gives
years
his
old.
Name. We'll call what?
So she's 68 years old.
Right. He does not say when she turned the benefits on, though.
Okay.
He says, I, and he gives his name, but we'll skip his name, was born April 25th, 1951. So I will be 70 April 25th, 2021.
Right.
And that's when I want to start collecting my Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. The Social Security website estimates my benefits on a monthly basis at that time will be $3,400.
Yep.
Couple of questions. First, how far in advance should I apply for my age 70 benefits? My 2020 income tax return, which will show my income, is unlikely to be submitted before mid-October of 2021. So I'm guessing he's filing for an extension. He knows that already, and he's worried that his earnings this year are not going to be submitted before he claims. So anyways, he wants to know when should he apply. Mm-hmm. Then his next question, when my age 70 benefits begin, will my wife be able to collect a spousal benefit equal to 50% of what I'm receiving? Will that be automatic, or will she need to request a switch to spousal benefits?
Excellent questions. So the first part of that, the easiest one, when should I apply? General rule is 3 months before you want to start receiving benefits. Be forewarned, though, that the default recommendation, or the way they by default start to fill out the paperwork, particularly if you go into a Social Security office, which he didn't indicate if he's doing that or not, is to mention to you that, hey, did you know that you could file retroactively and collect 6 months' worth of benefits that you've missed out on? And that sounds enticing, but it's going to reduce your benefit amount as if you had claimed 6 months prior. So unless that's what you want to do, make sure that they don't do that by default. So if you want to maximize your benefit, you're going to want it to start and not be retroactively applied for. You want it to start April of 2021. He indicated he has an estimate of $3,400 there. So in this particular case, his full retirement age was 66, so he's waited 4 years, gotten 32% more benefit than he would have gotten back in when he was 66. His wife's receiving $1,450, and so he, you know, most people realize that there's some type of spousal gets half rule. Well, we have to understand exactly what the spousal benefit is. The spousal benefit is one half of the full retirement age benefit of, in this case, the husband, the higher wage worker here. Well, the higher wage worker at full retirement age, if it's $3,400 at 70, his benefit back at full retirement age was approximately, and this doesn't adjust for cost of living adjustments and things that have gone on, but about a little over $2,500 a month was his what we call PIA, primary insurance amount. The spousal benefit is based off of that, not off of what you are actually collecting. He will actually be collecting $3,400. Half of that is $1,700, which is more than the $1,450 the wife is collecting. In this particular case, Jim, you mentioned it didn't say when the wife collected. Doesn't matter here. If my math is holding true, unless I'm missing something in this case, his PIA was a little over $2,500. Let's call it $2,600. Half of that, doing my math, $1,300. So the spousal benefit maxes at $1,300. She's already collecting on her own benefit $1,450. She does not get a spousal benefit because the spousal is less than what her own benefit is. She's better off continuing to collect her own. So the simple answer here is, unless I'm missing some part of the story they didn't include, I don't see any way that she is going to receive a spousal benefit in this particular case. So those are the, it's a good question because this is kind of the nuances of knowing exactly how the math works and exactly what is the figure that they cut in half to determine the spousal. Here it's not the $3,400 what he's actually collecting. Now, on the other hand, survivor benefit, if he were to pass away, she gets the full $3,400. She steps into his shoes, essentially, and receives what he was receiving before he passed away. even if he hadn't claimed yet, let's say he unfortunately passes away March 31st or April 1st of this year, right before his benefit kicks in, she will be able to receive a survivor benefit of what he could have been receiving had he claimed right before he died. A lot of people misconstrue that. I hear this a lot, and that's why I'm mentioning it. People talk about the disadvantage of delaying between full retirement age and 70. They're worried that, well, I'm going to delay, but then what if I pass away? My spouse, you know, isn't going to get the benefit of all that delay. That's totally wrong. The survivor benefit maintains any delayed retirement credits that the worker had earned up until the point of him passing away. The way you should think about it is the survivor benefit will be based on what you were either collecting the day you passed away or what you could have collected if you had filed the day before you passed away. That's kind of the simple way I have of describing it to people. So in this particular case, the delay did nothing for benefiting her from a spousal standpoint. She gets her $1,450 either way, but the survivor benefit has been maximized for her if he should pass away. And actually, it's maximized for both of them, because whether he passes away first or she passes away first, it's the lower benefit, her $1,450, that's going to go away. The survivor, whichever the two of them it is, will keep the $3,400. So I answered a few things he didn't ask there, but there were natural kind of questions that I hear people when they have conversations on this particular topic. So no, I don't think you're going to get a spousal benefit for your wife. And 2-3 months before is the safe spot. Then we're sure that it starts. If some reason you miss it and they don't get it started up in time, which the April benefit would be paid in May, it's always paid in arrears. If you don't file in time for them to get it started in April, so you get your May deposit, they'll make it up to you. It's not like you're going to miss out on it, but it's best to make everything work smoothly, that you get everything in line, ready to go 3 months before. So if you haven't done it already, get in there and claim, set the claim up to start April of 2021.
Okay. Well, that was a very good answer, I thought.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, there's a lot of confusion on this pot, yeah. And we seem to get these questions, or at least to varying degrees of all of these types of questions, on a regular basis when it comes to spousal benefits and turning on your own and when you can. It's straightforward, but it can be confusing to those who don't quite follow it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple of annuity questions, and we have a coronavirus-related distribution question. Even though he doesn't know that's what he was asking, And I wanted to address that as well.
Okay.
So, and we got some book recommendations. Let's jump into that. We've been getting book recommendations. So I do want to address this, because you remember last Q&A show, mm-hmm. we had that young guy. I think mm-hmm. he was 32 or 35, the mechanic. Mm-hmm. Do you remember him?
I do.
And he wanted some good books on retirement planning. And we had our colleague Andy, who's a member of the XY Planning Network, which is geared specifically for young folk in their 20s and 30s. And there was really not many good recommendations. So we put out a call, and our listeners, God bless you stepped up. The good news is I got a lot of emails. Bad news is I printed them out, and they're on my desk downstairs in the office. but I do have one of the printed emails here where I had written some of the book recommendations on.
Oh, perfect.
So I'm going to be reading these book recommendations, I think, on the next few Q&A shows. I do thank you, listeners, who have given our young listeners some recommendations on books to consider. And I've got about 3 or 4 right here, and I'll get to the rest of the recommendations after. But here are some for a young 33, he said. I thought mm-hmm. it was 32.
No, I think it was 33.
Was he 30? Okay. Mm-hmm. Here are some book recommendations as requested by your young 33-year-old listener. Sound Retirement Planning by Jason Paca. You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think by Wes Moss. Your Money or Your Life. Well, that doesn't sound like a retirement planning book. It sounds like something that a mug right. is going to say to you.
Right.
Apparently, Your Money or Your Life. I wonder if the subtitle is A Mugger's Guide to an Early Retirement.
Right.
I'm making fun of it, and I never saw the book, so I apologize. Yeah. The author is Vicki Robin. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Your Money or Your Life has a meaning far beyond what jumped into my. Remember, I'm an ex-cop, folks, so I'm thinking your money or your life. Sounds like something a mugger would say. But anyways, Your Money or Your Life by Vicki Robin. The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. Obviously, that is from a Vanguardian, which we have many listening to this show, by John C. Bogle, the founder of Vanguard. Rest his soul.
Very famous book.
And The Boglehead's Guide to Retirement Planning, which was written by four people. And I don't have the name of the four people, but it is called The Boglehead's Guide to Retirement Planning. One of the authors was not John Bogle. So I think it was just four Bogleheads who wrote a Boglehead Guide for Retirement Planning. But anyways, those were some of the recent book recommendations that we have received. And we've gotten a lot more. Thank you. And please keep sending them. And I'll keep reading them to our young listener and listeners. I'm sure we have more than one 30-something-year-old listener. And maybe they can learn something from them. How's that?
Perfect.
All right. All right. So the next question literally just came in. A few minutes before you and I sat down, or I sat down, I don't know if you're sitting, for recording this. So I didn't even print it out. I wanted to address it right away because it ties to the show we just did, the EDU show. So everyone listening to the Q&A show, at least regular listeners who have listened to the Q&A show, would have likely had the same confusion that this gentleman had, and I wanted to address it. But then he also says a few other things that I do want to address those as well. So it comes in regarding the EDU show we just did on indexed annuities, Chris. So he begins. Number one, I think you were very misleading when talking about fixed annuities. You made it sound like the rates are only guaranteed for 1 year, which is incorrect. I have a 5-year and a 4-year MYGA, M-Y-G-A, both paying 3.05%, similar to a CD. Maybe you were not including these, but they are also called fixed annuities. So I do want to address that because he is right. I don't think I was being misleading at all. I was talking about apples. He's talking about oranges. So let me clear the air here. One of the biggest issues I have with annuities, as you know, Chris, is they all get lumped into one category, annuities. They all share a name, annuity, but there are so many different types of annuities. Right. That's why I use the analogy of dogs. There's a ton of different dogs. They all might be canines, have four legs, fur, and a tail, and ears, and sharp teeth, but they're not all the same. There's all different types of dogs. Same thing with annuities, folks. So this gentleman with a MYGA, M-Y-G-A, stands for Multi-Year Guaranteed Annuity. I was not talking about MYGAs on the EDU show. And I had been thinking in the back of my head, Chris, when I was recording that show to mention that, but I never did. MYGAs are a type of fixed annuity like that gentleman mentioned. But and they are a deferred fixed annuity. You don't get income out of them right away.
Right.
And he is correct. A MYGA works similar to a CD. There's a lot of big differences. They're not FDIC insured. If you close a CD, the most you give up is some interest, but you get all your principal back before it matures. If you close a MYGA before it matures, you will lose principal in addition to interest. So there are some differences with a MYGA and a bank CD. But he is correct. They work very, very similar to a CD, and they are a fixed annuity, and they do pay the same amount of interest every single year.
Right.
Now, his are paying 3.05 on a, what did he say? He has a 5-year and a 4-year. I would assume those were purchased a little while ago. He didn't recently purchase them, in other words, within the last week or so, because you can't get those rates right now. But he is earning 3%, 3.05, folks, and he will earn that every single year,
right.
3.05. The 4-year MYGA will last for 4 years. The 5-year MYGA will last, obviously, for 5 years. Now, when his MYGA matures, he's going to be given a few choices. Now, these choices are going to vary based on the insurance company. These aren't industry standard choices. They're the choices we typically see when it matures. The vast, vast majority of MIGAs, when they mature, within 30 days, you can move your money. Or what do you think the insurance company does, Chris?
Puts you into another one.
Puts you in another one. Similar to a CD. So he did reference CDs. CDs are the same way. They give you 30 days to make up your mind. Or they'll put you in another CD of the same length. So his four-year MIGA will be put into a new four-year. His five-year MIGA will be put into a new five-year MIGA. They give you 30 days to make up your mind, and they will mail you a letter and ask, what do you want to do with it? If you do nothing, it'll go into a new one. Not at 3.05% interest, though. At whatever new MIGAs are paying. Could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less. It's whatever current interest rates are offering.
Could be a lot more or a lot less after 4 or 5 years.
Correct. Could be a lot more, could be a lot less. So that's one option, and it's pretty much the industry standard option. Your other option is to close it. Now, all MIGAs give you that option at any time. Again, if you close it during the 4 or 5 year period in his example, you will pay a penalty to close it. And that penalty is going to be disclosed to you. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my computer shut off again. Remember last time and it stopped, you couldn't hear me anymore. So okay. I hit it really fast. Anyways, folks, I'm at home on a laptop. And apparently if it goes into sleep mode, Chris can't hear me in it. Went into sleep mode before I could hit it, but I must have hit it just in time.
Perfect. Just wiggle your mouse every couple minutes.
You're going to have to fix that too. Keep it from going. Show me how to keep it from going to sleep.
I will.
Okay. So anyways, back to what I was saying. So the MIGA will mature, and it might automatically renew, or you can close it, but you can close it whenever you want. If you close it during the penalty period, obviously you'll pay a penalty. The penalty period lasts as long as the term of the MIGA. So his five-year MIGA has a five-year penalty period. His four-year MIGA has a four-year penalty period. Then he has a 30-day window in most cases to make up his mind to do something where he can close it and take the money out. He can also move it to another MIGA or move it to another annuity, his choice. At a different company, or let it auto-renew. Once it auto-renews, folks, there will be a new penalty period. Now, some MIGAs, and there's only a few, but I tend to favor these. Some MIGAs will give you another option, Chris. It will turn kind of into a fixed annuity paying the guaranteed interest rate built into the policy, which if you've listened to last week's show, right now is pretty much a standard 1%. The company that I tend to use for my clients with a MIGA pays a 1%. So it gives you another choice, Chris. It becomes a liquid annuity, so you can close it anytime you want without a penalty. You're not going to get the initial interest rate, which in his case was 3.05, but it will pay a guaranteed 1%, irrespective of what interest rates are doing. Interest rates could be down to 0.25%, or they could be up to 2%. This MIGA will pay 1%, and you can close it whenever you want. I kind of like those MIGAs, Chris, because I don't think 30 days sometimes is enough to make up your mind of what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe some people definitely know what they're going to want to do, but the ability to have a little bit more time, or better yet, Chris, a lot of our clients use MIGAs to time a spending ladder rather than using a traditional bond ladder where bonds are not paying much in interest rates. MIGAs are paying more. And sometimes, Chris, you can't time the maturity of your three-year, four-year, or five-year MIGA exactly with when you need the money. The MIGA might mature in June, and you're not going to need it until September. So you're going to have that period of time where you're going to have to move it and do something with it. But with the MIGAs that I'm talking about that have the ability at the end of the term to go into a pretty much liquid MIGA, if you will, paying the contract stated minimum, which right now with the company that I'm using is 1%, and you can close it whenever you want, it gives you more time. You see, Chris, it allows you to go July, August, September, and then close it. Just in case the timing of the maturity of the MIGAs are off. Does that make a little bit of sense?
Mm-hmm. I see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what a MIGA is, folks. We were talking about a fixed annuity. Remember, there's many different kinds. There's many different kinds of dogs. There's many different kinds of annuities. There are also fixed annuities that do not guarantee the interest rate you are going to earn every single year. They reset it. They call it the declared rate, the declared account, the guaranteed account goes by different names, the annual renewable account goes by all different names. It's a deferred annuity, but it only pays the interest rate for 1 year. Every year on your anniversary, the interest rate can reset. The insurance company intends to honor your initial interest rate, but they make it perfectly clear to you there's no guarantee on that. Remember, on MIGA, what does the G stand for, Chris?
Guaranteed, preceded by multi-year. So they're guaranteeing it for multi-year instead of just that first year like the other annuities we were talking about.
But on the deferred annuity that I'm talking about, which is the chassis that indexed annuities are built on, which is what we were mainly talking about. Indexed annuities are built on the chassis of the deferred annuities that will pay a set interest rate for 1 year. And then it resets every year. The intent is to maintain it, but the insurance company can raise it or the insurance company can drop it. Mm-hmm. And you won't get that with the MIGA. The MIGA will never go up. It'll never go down. Pays the same amount of money. Now, the annuities that I'm talking about, Chris, are not that common. They're out there, and I've seen them, and they're often used, but they're not as common as a MIGA. It's just that our show last week, Chris, was on indexed annuities. And I said indexed annuities are a fixed annuity. Well, they're built on the chassis, not on the chassis of a MIGA, Chris. They're built on the chassis of an annuity that resets every year.
Right.
And then they offer something that the MIGAs don't offer, the ability to index your interest credits to some type of outside index. I hate to keep using that same word, but it's why they call them index annuities. And we're going to get into that deeper on next week's EDU show. But I wanted to address this in case there were other people who were listening saying, well, wait a minute, Jim, I've got an annuity that matures every year. It's a fixed annuity. You don't know what you're talking about. I do know what I'm talking about. It's just that indexed annuities are built on the chassis of the fixed annuities that only guarantee the stated interest rate, the declared account is what most insurance companies call it, for 1 year. And then they declare it again the following year. Right. And it makes sense, Chris, because on an indexed annuity, you have to have a start point and an end point for the measuring index. So to build it on a chassis where the interest rate gets set every year is perfect fit.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they can set the index, and most indexes are a one-year term, but as we'll talk about next week, there could be more than a one-year term. So that's why they built it on that chassis. So they could have an index credit from your anniversary date to your next anniversary date that kind of matches with the annual renewable declared rate account. Does that make sense?
Perfectly. Yep.
Perfect. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I thought it would. But then this gentleman goes on, and I do want to address what he says next because it really did impact me personally.
Just
same email.
Okay, so not a separate question. This is extension.
Just, he continues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to answer the first part or at least address the first part mm-hmm. because, I mean, he's accusing me of being misleading, which I was not being misleading. He's got an apple and I was talking about an orange. So I was just trying to get him to understand mm-hmm. there's MIGAs and then there's fixed deferred annuities. I was talking about a fixed deferred annuity, which a MIGA is, but it's a different type of fixed deferred annuity. Just like I tried to say last week, I had a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, which is a dog, and there's a Chihuahua, which is a dog, but they're two totally different dogs.
Right.
Same thing. He's talking about a Chessie. I was talking about a Chihuahua or the other way around.
Right.
Okay. But then he continues. And again, I want to address this. He says, number two, if you could simply not talk so much, you would greatly improve the good that you do. You use 1,000 words when you could easily use, excuse me, you use 1,000 words when you need 200, and you waste so much time. Your verbiage makes an hour show a 30-minute show. And I think he means that the other way around, Chris, a 30-minute show into an hour show. And you end up being annoying and inefficient. I like you, but you need to work on that big time. I hope you are feeling well. Definitely passive-aggressive in that paragraph. And I do want to address it.
I don't know. Probably I don't think he's passive-aggressive necessarily.
Well, he starts off ripping me one, calling me annoying and inefficient, and then ends with, I hope you're feeling well. That's passive-aggressive. If I am so annoying, don't listen to the show. You don't have to write to me and tell me I'm annoying and I'm inefficient. I'm 57 years old. I'm soon to be 58. This is who I am. It's my personality. The clients who work with us like the depth and detail that I get into and how I try to explain everything to them in a way that they understand, as opposed to trying to give just a 200-word, in your example, answer that may not capture everything, all the nuances that I try to teach, all the stuff that I try to get into. I don't do this show for any other reason except I like it. I enjoy doing it. But honestly, listener, if you find me annoying, don't listen to the show. But if you think I'm going to be able to change, I read once that your personality is set by age 12 and it's not going to change. I am who I am. I repeat myself several times, and I admit that, but I do that on purpose. You obviously understand annuities. You have them, you understand them, so you felt last week's show was going on and on and on and inefficient. But I don't do the show just for you. I do the show for people who may not quite understand every concept. And only after hearing something, I've talked about this repeatedly on the show, Chris, three times or more does something start to sink in. But I also think the financial services industry goes out of their way, and especially the insurance industry, sometimes goes out of their way not to fully explain things, to kind of keep things a little bit opaque. And I try to pull the skin of the onion back, or whatever that saying is. And yeah, that sometimes means I go down rabbit holes. If you don't like it, don't listen. But I don't need to read that I'm annoying and inefficient and I talk too much. It's who I am, folks. I can't change that. And I'm just trying to do the best I can, trying to help people learn. Chris and I don't charge for this. We don't do the stupid podcast that always end with, well, call us. If you call me, I'll tell you more. Call me and I'll tell you more. And then try to jam some product down your throat. We openly tell you what we do, how we do it, why we do it. We give you the information to do it on your own. Chris openly shares knowledge about Social Security. He's not out there doing seminars, trying to lure people in with his Social Security knowledge so he can jam them into some type of investment product over free dinner. It's just who we are. And I'm not meaning to throw you under this, Chris, but I do want to address this because I've been told several times recently that I talk too much. It's who I am, folks, and I'm going to continue doing it. And I'm not going to be able to change it. I'm not a psychologist, but I do know my personality was set when I was 12, and there's nothing I can do about it. If you don't like the obviously you like the information, but you don't like the provider. And unfortunately, both of those come together as one, and there's nothing I can do about it. Anyways, Chris, I just wanted to address that.
I get it. It can be hurtful to hear somebody call you annoying. The repeating yourself periodically, I mean, that is kind of who you are. That is what it is, and some people don't like it. It's totally, I totally get that. It is helpful for some people, and it's annoying for other people. So it's hard sometimes to strike the right balance, and clearly he thinks that we're on the wrong side of that balance, at least in the show he was referring to. Some shows are tighter than others, but we are far from professional podcasters. I'll tell you that. So this is, you know, kind of on the fly. It's always been that way. It's always been. So it's, you know, if we professionally produced it and cut it into a timeline and our goal was to get you as much information as we could in 20 minutes, it would be a very different show for sure. But
and that's a good way of putting it, because when we did that EDU show on indexed annuities last week, literally, I decided 5 minutes before the show, this is what we're going to talk about. Did I have any notes in my hands when I told you we're talking about this? No.
Which is, you know, part of the reason why it just kind of organically evolves as the show goes on. That is kind of how this show works, for good or
exactly.
bad, right? I totally see the bad part of that, too. There are, it's pros and cons, right? So it's... I mean, I appreciate that he listens, and I appreciate that he gets good information out of it. At this point, having done this show now with you for, 10 years plus, it is pretty much the same format as it's always been, and it's likely not to change for the reasons like you mentioned. So,
it's not. Yeah. Again, if we were being paid, or if our business model was to broadcast and we're being paid to broadcast, like Dave Ramsey or all some of the other ones, and that was it, or we were trying to sell ad space on here or whatever it is, as Chris said, I would go in with a script. I remember when I first started doing this, the radio station couldn't believe I didn't come in with a script. What are you going to talk about? It's all in my head. And compliance, remember back then we had a compliance department that we had to do.
Yeah,
they kept saying, send us the script
before you do it. Yeah.
There is no script. I kept telling them.
Our only instructions are push record.
Exactly. I said, if I can't talk for an hour every day, and then it became 3 hours on the radio show, and then it became the podcast, and then two. But I told them, if I can't talk for an hour or two about what in the hell it is I do, I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. If I got to go in there with cheat sheets and notes. Now, I agree, a cheat sheet and notes would keep me on track, and I could do a more succinct one-hour show, and I could sell ad time, which would eat up 20 minutes of the one-hour show, and I can pepper you with ads, or repeat over and over every 10 seconds my phone number and tell you to call for more info and give you no info at all, just enough to make you say, well, I didn't learn anything. I got to call this guy and find out more. That's not the way we do it. I come in here, and I yabber for an hour, and then I'm done. It's who I am. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you find me annoying. There's nothing I can do about it. But I have learned, especially since my stroke and nearly dying, there's more to life than complaining about things you don't like. And that's all I have to say about it. All right. Let's get into a question here, because I think this gentleman is definitely doing something wrong, and I want to help him out before he does something really wrong. So this has to do with a QC. Not, oh, here we go.
CRD.
A CRD. And don't press the beeper thing if I say QCD. CRD.
Well, we'll see how many times it happens. Then I'm going to whip out the buzzer.
No, because I'll get another email that not only am I annoying, I cause you to cause buzzes all the time. Then more people will hate me. So... I don't think he realizes what situation is. I think you'll cringe a little bit too as I start to read this, Chris.
Okay.
Hi, Jim and Chris. Mm-hmm. Love your show. So at least someone does.
Now you're being oversensitive.
Hi, Jim and Chris. Love your show. Here's my question. I took withdrawals from my regular IRA and my Roth IRA at 61 years of age. That was last year, by the way, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The taxable amount was over $100,000, and I will be taxed on it in 2020. I did this because I lost my job. Now listen closely, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my job right before the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm. But in 2020.
In 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to get, what is it here? Then I had to get months of medical treatments and operations for a serious medical problems for serious medical problems that lasted almost all of 2020. He never says what those medical problems are, Chris. He doesn't mm-hmm. say if he ever had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Just says serious medical problems. Could be anything. I mean, mm-hmm. I had a serious medical problem in 2020. Had nothing to do with COVID, as we all know. After that, because of other risk factors, I consider myself high risk to catch COVID. And because he wrote that, I'm guessing he didn't have right. COVID mm-hmm. originally. Therefore, I delayed getting back into the workforce for the rest of 2020. But I also did not qualify for any unemployment benefits. I'm going to pause there. I don't understand that, Chris, because he began that he lost his job. If he got laid off or fired or the company closed, he should have been eligible for unemployment benefits, mm-hmm. folks. So I don't quite know. Those two didn't match up, especially even if he was self-employed, which he doesn't say. Even if he was self-employed, when the feds passed the CARES Act, they started giving $600 a month to self-employed people who never even paid into Social Security. Self-employed people don't pay Social Security, who never paid into unemployment.
Right.
Self-employed people don't pay into it. Government didn't care. They were going to give it to him. So I'm going to encourage this listener. You might have qualified for unemployment. Mm-hmm. What you wrote there just doesn't seem to make sense. They were throwing money around last year like drunk sailors on shore leave. And you clearly state you lost your job before the pandemic began.
Yeah.
Now he might have quit his job because of his medical issues. That's what I'm thinking right. might have happened, but he doesn't give me enough info. And if that's the case, he had serious medical issues, so he had to leave his job. Maybe that prevents him from getting unemployment.
Yeah.
But he doesn't specify enough there.
Right.
Anyways, let me continue going on.
Mm-hmm.
I did not qualify for unemployment or any of the COVID-19 support payments. Again, if he's referencing all those stimulus checks, if he had a job and filed tax returns, he should have got those stimulus checks, Chris.
Yeah.
Now, it's possible he earned more. He doesn't say if he's married or single.
True.
It's possible he earned more than those limits, and that's why he didn't get them. So again, I have to read
right.
into this a lot. But anyways, my question is the following. Can I pay all my 2020 taxes due in a lump sum in the third payback year and skip having to pay taxes the first 2 years to the IRS? This will give me time to get back to work and save up for the taxes I owe. Now, let me pause there, Chris, because you know where he's making a mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
He thinks this... The CRD, folks, coronavirus-related distribution, allows you to take out up to $100,000 from your IRA and not have to pay the money, the taxes. You are allowed to spread the taxes out over 3 years. Now, the short answer to his question, can he pay zero, and then all the taxes in year three? No.
No.
You have to pay it all in year one, 2020, or a third. But I don't think he qualifies for a coronavirus-related distribution, Chris. That's my problem.
Yeah.
Now, he took the money out in 2020. The law doesn't say, the law covers a coronavirus-related distribution anytime in 2020. The question is, does he qualify? He never once told us. But the qualifications, folks, and listener in general, and I'm getting this straight from the IRS's website, you are diagnosed with COVID, or your spouse is diagnosed with COVID, or a dependent is diagnosed with COVID. He never said any of that, Chris. He says he had medical issues, but he doesn't say they were COVID. You experience adverse financial consequences as a result of being quarantined, furloughed, or laid off due to COVID.
Right.
He said he lost his job before the pandemic. Did he lose it because of COVID? I don't know. It doesn't sound like it. I'm still assuming, again, he lost his job due to medical reasons. In other words, I'm thinking he left voluntarily due to medical reasons. That's why he didn't qualify for unemployment.
Right.
But before he left, he earned too much, or the previous year, which is the income they looked at, he earned too much. Now, the good news is that's just jumping into my head. He said he didn't qualify for any of the stimulus payments. He very well may, because I believe they can look at 2020 income, can't they? Earned income, not just 2019, which is what they were basing the 2020 on.
Yeah, so there's some adjustments. If he didn't automatically qualify, you can have them look at more recent information to qualify.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's more of a Bob question, and he's not on today's show. So I don't think he got laid off due to COVID. But then it says you have experienced adverse financial consequences as a result of being unable to work due to COVID or a lack of childcare due to COVID. Again, he doesn't indicate any of that.
Well, that one's close because he said that, you know, I'm not saying he has a definite pass here, but that's close enough. If he can't get back to work because of COVID, arguably, that kind of falls in that category you just mentioned.
True. And if he's not going back because of COVID now, he's saying he's high risk, or he feels he's high risk, which again lends me to thinking he had a different medical condition. Mm-hmm. And because of COVID and he's high risk, he can't go back. He may be able to make that argument. So he may be able to squeak by and say, yeah, this is a CRD. And then, of course, the final is you experience adverse financial conditions as a result of your business. If you're self-employed, closing down or getting reduced hours, or you had reduced hours again for an employer due to COVID. But I see where you're going with that, Chris. He may qualify for the previous one that I read.
Yeah.
He's not going back to work and couldn't go back to work because of COVID. He can't find a job or he's high risk. That might work. The good news is, folks, I don't think the IRS is going to be auditing a whole heck of a lot of these. Now, that is not me saying go ahead and mislead the IRS listener or listeners. I'm saying it's going to really come down to interpretation if you get audited. Chris is right. He may be able to qualify. By saying I can't find a new job because of COVID, I'm high risk because of COVID with these documented medical facts, and one could say I qualify for QCD.
Right.
It does not matter that he took the $100,000 out of his IRA before the pandemic, quote unquote, hit.
Right. That's the good news. That didn't prevent him from calling this a CRD. It's luckily. Because otherwise that we could look at that and say he's disqualified because he did it before the COVID thing kind of hit. So,
correct. So then if you do qualify for a CRD listener, which I would concede Chris's point, and perhaps you do, on that one fact. If it is a QCD.
CRD.
Oh, goodness. A CRD. You cannot do your original thought, though.
Right.
Pay zero, zero, and then all the taxes in year three. You have a choice. The default is going to be a third, a third, a third. The fact of the matter is you could pay it all in year one, which would be declare it all in your 2020, which sounds like you don't want to do. Or you're going to declare a third of the income, a third of the income, and a third of the income. You're not technically paying a third, a third, a third of the taxes. You are declaring a third of the income, a third of the income, and a third of the income.
Right.
But I want to give you something to think about, listener. I don't think you have a whole heck of a lot of income this year. You're anticipating a rise of income. I'm guessing one of the reasons you didn't qualify for the stimulus payments is your 2019 income was too high. If you're a married couple, that's, what is it, $150,000? Is that what it was?
It started to phase out right about there, yeah.
Okay. It is possible, Chris. I don't know because we don't do his taxes. But it is possible he's in the lowest tax position he's going to be in this year. And maybe it would, even though painful, behoove him to pay it all back this year. If he's going to get back to work and if he's a high wage earner, he may be in higher brackets next year and the year after.
True. Be worth looking
at. I don't know because, again, we don't do his taxes. We haven't crunched his numbers. But I think he should look at this from a tax perspective. At the very least, you're going to have to declare a third of it as income. And it sounds to me like you have precious little income this year. That's why you took the $100,000 out. He ends with essentially asking, can he put the money back into a Roth IRA or does it have to go into a traditional IRA? And here again is where Ed Slott says it kind of goes against the spirit of the law, but there is nothing preventing you from putting it into a Roth instead of a traditional.
And that, if you're putting it back, then that changes the tax story, too.
It does. So, anyways, I thought that was a good question. I tend to agree now more than I did when I first read it, that he would qualify for a CRD based on your line of thinking, that he's unable to work due to COVID. It never doesn't really say. It's not that you have to be denied a job like the business closed down or the business isn't offering.
Right.
He's a high-risk person, and he can't go out. He has to stay in isolation, I guess, if you will, and stay away from people, and going to work and catching COVID could be dangerous to him. I would make that argument, Chris, that that sounds viable and what Congress was looking to protect. So he very well may be able to treat this as a CRD, but spreading out the taxes into just the third year, no. And you're not really spreading out the taxes, listener. You're spreading out the declaration of the income. Right. The taxes will be based on that year's earnings. So that's what you have to keep in mind as you do this. Should you do a third, a third, a third, or all in this year? If you're going to be in a low bracket this year, and maybe you have a lot of medical expenses that you could deduct. You don't have much income. So it might not be hard to get a lot of your medical expenses deducted as well. And you're going to have your standard deduction. He might be able to declare the income this year, Chris, and not owe much in taxes at all.
Right.
And it may be painful, but you might want to try doing it. He mentioned he has a Roth. He might be able to take the taxes out of the Roth tax-free, depending on how old he is. And, oh, he's 61. So he could take money out of the Roth tax-free to pay the taxes. I'm just thinking out loud without actually crunching his tax situation. But I would be very intrigued because he has so little earned income. Granted, he's going to have $100,000 or thereabouts. He doesn't say how much of that $100K was from an IRA and how much was from his Roth.
No, he said $100K was taxable.
Oh, the tax amount was over $100,000. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So he's going to have $100,000 of income, but he might have a lot of medical deductions and he will have his standard deduction. It just something
it'd be
he
worth
should
looking
look
at. Yeah, worth looking at. Well, we're going to have to wrap up at that on this question. The other ones you've got, well, we can dive into next week. So we want to thank everybody for listening and sending in your questions. And Anything else you want to share before you head off for your weekend? I guess you've got the rest of the day to work, of course, but we're close.
Working, yeah.
We're close. It's Friday.
Junior leave at 1:30. So I'm like the only one left. It's me and Brett.
Well, it's because you make them.
Well, they want to start early, so
they work
leave
early. Them. They work more early days of the week, and then they.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm the owner of the business. I've been doing this for 20
odd
years.
The owner works the most.
I know.
You just have to accept that.
I can't get a damn Friday off.
You just have to accept that.
Goodness, something's wrong with this picture.
It's all good. Someday
but
you'll have
anyways,
more time on your hands. So, okay.
I've got nothing really much to add, except, folks, if you have any questions that you would like to address on the Q&A show, simply send them. You can visit our website, Jim Helps, J-I-M-H-E-L-P-S, jimhelps.com. You can learn more about Chris and I. You can schedule a coffee and a second opinion if you think we may be able to assist you with anything. But you can also click the Contact Us button and send us an email for the show, or do what most people do. You can send it directly to jim@jimhelps.com, and we will try to get it on a future show for you.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thanks again for everybody listening. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.